Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the brand new show here on the Foyerstein's Fire American Soccer Show. I'm your host, Daniel Foyerstein. I'll give you an American perspective of our clubs, leagues, players, national team, and other fabulous moments. You can get your daily reading from the other writers over at SoccerNewsDay.com, as well as locally in New York on FansFavorite.com. Episode number 231, the 2015 USL season preview show. And I'm very grateful and very glad to have these gentlemen on that either cover, work for, or are part of their clubs. On right now, we have Mr. Dalton Main over in Louisville City. We have, welcome back, Austin. Welcome back, the Aztecs, to the USL Pro, excuse me, to the USL. Mr. Matthew Gray from Eberle's Army is with us. We also have on with us Brian Kaiser in Harrisburg, and we have Josh Beeman over in Sacramento. Very soon, hopefully, we'll have Brendan Doherty on from Rochester. Speaking about the devil, on his Skype, Brendan Doherty from Rochester is on. Gentlemen, let's get on with this 2015 season preview, and we're going to start off with Brian Kaiser in Harrisburg, because Brian, as we already know, a couple of weeks ago, the president of the USL, Tim Holt, has stepped down running all levels of the United Soccer Leagues. We have a brand new person on. I forget his name at the moment, but this was a strange time to see Tim Holt just stepping away from such a top position in the United Soccer League.
Well, I brought the confetti for you because I know he was not a personal favorite of yours. But, yes, you know, it really strange. You know, the fact that at the beginning of a season with just the amount of expansion, the amount of teams, the amount of buzz behind the league, the fact that the league has announced that they are applying to get second-level status in American soccer. You know, amid all of that stuff, for all of a sudden Tim Holt to up and go, you know what, I'm going to step down right now, was really, really odd. And I'm interested to see where things go from here. I'm not sure if that was, you know, it seems weird, at least from my perspective, if this was a decision that Tim Holt made on his own. That's all I'm going to put it out. For him to have this season coming to where it was, and for him to just say, you know what, I don't think this is, I needed to move on from here right at this time, was really odd. So I just have a feeling that there's a lot more to it that we just don't know about, and maybe behind the scenes, maybe just things weren't what they appeared to be up front, and maybe somebody said, you know what, I think we need somebody else running the ship. I don't know if that's the case, but at least that's the speculation that I would go with right now, if for no other reason, because it was such an odd situation for him just to step right before the season starts.
Absolutely, and hopefully we'll see where this new direction will go with the USL. And of course, once again, USL Pro is no longer around. It's just the USL. I think that's a very interesting change that we're going to have here. But here's another interesting change we have for this season. I want everyone to take a deep breath and inhale, then exhale, because Orlando City is no longer in the USL. The USL is no longer a part of Orlando City. They're in Major League Soccer, of course. And, of course, joining us that has taken over Orlando's spot is Mr. Dalton Main over in Louisville City. Dalton, it's just really amazing to see how Louisville, Kentucky, has taken to this professional club side. And as you've told me a couple of times, either on Twitter or we had phone conversations, the city is going crazy for soccer, and Louisville City is just a heck of a name. I love the logo.
Yeah, definitely. And first off, as you said,
you know, Orlando City is gone from USL, but I think you're going to have some moments of deja vu this season when you see Louisville City play. You know, to get the team started and to bring the team here from Orlando was a big grassroots movement. Back in January of 2014, you know, it had just been announced that Orlando would be moving to the USL a couple months prior. And in that January, there was a group called the Louisville Coopers. They have a big following. They were all about bringing a pro team to town, and when they heard that there was one available and that somebody in town was already involved, that's the current, you know, owner, Wayne Osopinall, they rallied, they had a big meeting, they threw a party.
Uh-huh. Well, it looks like he got put on mute for a minute, but don't worry, we'll get him back soon. But as we continue on here with the show, hopefully we'll have Dalton coming back on quickly. Let's go to Austin, Texas. Obviously, it's been just an interesting thing here when we have a team that was originally in Texas. They moved to Orlando, and then they came back in Austin in the PDL, now back in the USL for the first time in a long time. Matthew, it's just fantastic for everyone in Austin to get back into the swing of things, being back in third division soccer.
Yeah, there's a lot of excitement down here in Austin around the return of professional soccer to Central Texas. You're right, the front office decided to relocate the club in October of 2010. We spent really probably after a couple of months of trying to get our heads around that, we immediately jumped into working with David Markley, who even before Phil Rollins owned the USL franchise rights for Central Texas, and immediately started to work on bringing soccer back to Austin. We eventually got the PDL franchise in 2011. We hit the field in 2012 with the PDL squad headed up by Paul DeGlish, who at the time was working with Lone Star Soccer Club, which is a youth academy system here in Austin, won the national championship in 2013, and in 2014 announced that we were going to be playing our 2015 season at what that time was USL Pro. Since then, we've, of course, gone to USL, and for some of us old dogs, it's a little bit hard, so we have to ask people to be gracious with us, and when we say USL Pro, just thank USL.
No, absolutely. I mean, it's going to take us some time to get used to it. I know I'm going to probably get used to it, but one of the things that I'm happy about, though, when you're getting used to some of these teams that have been in the USL for a while, as well as before being in the USL, and that's up in Rochester, and Brendan Doherty, of course. Brendan, it's 20 years of Rochester Rhino soccer in Western New York. It's a long time for a minor league side to stay strong and staying with it, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And is there any special things that the Rhinos are going to do? Probably bring back some of those old players that were part of that U.S. Open Cup championship back in defeating the Colorado Rapids. I think it was 1999 when that happened.
Yeah, definitely. Every time I've talked to Pat Erkely, who's now the club president, used to be a coach, he was the coach when the team won all those titles and won the U.S. Open Cup. Every time I talk to him about anything, he always manages to bring that up, bring up that this is the 20th season, that they're really proud of that. They're making a special 20th anniversary jersey, and I'm not sure if that is in place of a regular jersey or just in addition to. So the team has a new logo just for this year. It's a more, I think, less cartoonish, more aggressive-looking rhinoceros, and it has two big X's for the Roman numerals for 20. And in addition to that, they're doing a Rhinos Legends game. They've already started drafting former players for this, I guess, stroll down memory lane type of exhibition game that they're going to have in the middle of the summer.
That's going to be awesome. And, of course, Salem Stadium is going to be pretty exciting to have that 20th anniversary and season. And who knows, we'll see what's going to happen as we move on and get ready for this USL season here starting off this weekend. And now we go to the two sides that finished off 2014 with a flourish. Of course, the runners-up, Harrisburg City Islanders and Brian Kaiser. And Brian, once again, while we don't know what the roster will be, but I'm assuming a bunch of the mainstays from last year have returned. Bill Betcher has always been one of those top dog club coaches in the USL. I wouldn't be surprised he has another run in him this season.
I actually at this point would be surprised, just because at this point, I mean, I'm not putting anything past him. And he has done just a phenomenal job every year. The problem is when you say a lot of the mainstays are back, actually a lot of the mainstays are not back for this team. I'm looking around the different teams at this point and guys who had major parts in last year, you have Jamil Hardware. He's in St. Louis now. You've got a couple of the forwards that we had. Clesio Basque is back over playing for his club team. Morgan Langley is now with a first division team in Ireland in St. Patrick's FC. You've got Jason Pelletier, the longtime captain of the team. He's retired at this point. So did Colin Zizzi. Robbie Dershang is out in Arizona, and he had a real impact at the end of the season. Brian Sylvester, a very talented backup keeper who really showed well in the Open Cup last year, he's no longer there. So it's Nick Noble, and who knows, as the backup at this point, as far as anyone who has any experience. Pedro Vero has already scored for Orlando City and helped them get their first win in the MLS. He was a substitute for them and played for them and scored to help them win this past week. Richie Marquez is up with the Union this year. So, you know, a lot of the guys who were major contributors last year are not going to be back with this team this year. So that means they've got to figure out who's going to be on this roster, who they're going to get from the Union, and when it's time to do that. And it seems like it's probably going to be a very young group. So it's going to be a tough coaching job this year for Coach Betcher. He's always shown in the past he's up to it. One other key is a couple of the assistant coaches, because of the longer season and because of commitment elsewhere, he's not going to have the services of his longtime trusted assistant, Steve Wittison, and also their goalkeeping coach, Dave Kern. So it's going to be a different look this year, and it's a team where, considering how the league is, with so many different teams coming in and the talent being spread around, there's going to be talent out there. It's just a matter of where it ends up and who's going to be able to do so. Last year was a magical run. It's going to be a magical run again this year if they can repeat.
I will see what happens there. And when you're missing some big ingredients, sometimes the meal is not so good. But the place where it's really good right now, Sacramento Republic, the defending USL champions. And, of course, we go to Josh Beeman over on the West Coast in Sacramento. Josh, obviously a magical ride with the Sacramento Republic. I mean, if you could tell me that you thought you're going to win the championship in your first year, people would probably tell you that you're probably a little crazy. But the way that Preki handled that season last year, and I'll say this as well, pleasantly surprised before moving into your home, how Sacramentonians were able to fill up any stadium the Republic were playing in for home games, and I'm assuming there's an expansion being planned right now for your home stadium.
Yeah, they're actually literally in the middle of a Bonnie Field expansion. They're doing it in two stages. The first stage was a really large expansion of the supporters group area, the general admission area on the north side, I believe. It's probably about twice as big. It's just complete, enormous. They've taken to calling it Mount Sac Battalion after the supporters group. And right now they delayed the home opener to April 11th because of expected delays in the second part of the seating expansion on the west side, I believe, on the side of the press box. They're raising that up a little bit. So it's not going all according to plan, but we're definitely going to have more of a expanded seating capacity. I've been hearing more like 11,500 as opposed to 8,000 from last year.
Oh, that's wonderful to hear. 3,500 extra seats being built for Sacramento. And look, as long as it keeps growing, we still get these great cities as well in the USL League. obviously the game will grow in this country as well as, of course, with the affiliations going on with some of these teams. We got Dalton Maine back. Now let's talk about expansion sides right now, Dalton, obviously. As you've already said, Louisville City has taken over Orlando's spot in the third division here, and we've already said how exciting it is. What's it going to be like when you're going to see Louisville City not only hosting a legacy team like Rochester, a solid team like Harrisburg, but you also are going to have a couple of other teams that are expansion sides like St. Louis FC, obviously some of these MLS sides that are going to have their teams like the Red Bulls 2 team, Toronto FC 2, FC Montreal, which will be the Impact minor league side, and with the Eagles going to the PDL, the Charlotte Independents now taking over as the Division III side.
Well, I think you can be very excited about what they've called the King's Cup. That'll be St. Louis FC coming to town twice, and then Louisville City going to play at St. Louis FC twice. The supporters groups for both sides, the St. Louligans and the Coopers, have been exchanging barbs on Twitter, on Facebook, on any other kind of social media you can imagine that might exist. They are going after each other, and they're going after each other hard, and they're very excited about it. It's even more fun that it's going to be opening day, March 28th, that Louisville City will take on St. Louis FC. And then again on closing day, the last game of the season that Louisville City plays will be at St. Louis FC. So they've got a lot on the line. They're going to offer a trophy for that. They're going to do it on aggregate of the four games. But they're very excited about that. I mean, I just met with some of the Coopers yesterday, and they were talking about how pumped they are for it, all these plans they've got. They're lining up songs and everything. And I'm sure this is nothing new, but, you know, it is new for them, and it's new for St. Louis FC, or relatively. And I think they're very excited about that. And Louisville City is just, you know, they're open to everything that can happen. And the city, you know, is a huge place for other sports, but I think soccer is really going to be embraced here. I think a lot of people are going to turn out. You know, I couldn't say exactly what they're looking for in these expansion games and everything, but I would say look for big turnout from the supporters for St. Louis FC. And then they have landed themselves a July 4th game against, oh, man, I don't remember who they played that day, but that is going to be huge because there's big things going on down on the riverfront, which is where Louisville Slugger Field sits. And I think that is probably going to be their biggest turnout game of the year, you know, possibly next to the opener. So I think they expect big things this season.
Absolutely. And Matthew, will go back to Austin as well. Once again, the club is back in the third division, but it's obviously not the same team. But still, there's a lot of excitement in Austin again. As I'm not saying you're an expansion side, but maybe just as a revamp. I think I can say it to be fair to Austin. We don't have to rehash again what happened, obviously. But Colorado Springs, an expansion side. The Tulsa Roughnecks returns to professional soccer leagues. And we also have the Seattle Sounders 2, Vancouver Whitecaps 2, Real Monarchs, which will be a Real Salt Lake side, Portland Timbers 2. So you have to say there's a lot of excitement there with some of these expansion sides coming in on the Western Conference.
Yeah, and I would actually say, Dan, that it's appropriate to say this is an expansion side. I mean, yes, there has been an Aztecs back in the USL 1 days, but the reality is, from a front office perspective, a vast majority of that has turned over. There are a few players that are holdovers, but they're one or two. So, you know, in the West, we see a lot of teams that are brand spanking new, many of which you mentioned there. I think as we take a look at it from an Everly's Army perspective, you know, you look at how many of us, you know, were around from 2008 through 2010, there's probably maybe a dozen of us left. A vast majority of our membership came to Everly's Army, came to the Aztecs really within just the last 5 years or so. And so, you know, for those of us who've been around a while, it's great to be back with professional soccer with the Aztecs again, especially as we look at sort of the future of not only the Aztecs but the league as a whole. For a lot of people, this will be their first time on the train, and so we're gonna make sure and make it exciting for them.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely agree with you, Matthew, and hopefully we'll see a good Western Conference. And this is what I want. And obviously, we want to see some good battles going on in the field with all these teams in both East and West. Brendan, let me ask you this. Do you feel not playing any games against the Western Conference, because it looks like this is mostly East versus East, West versus West. It doesn't look to be there's any cross-country traveling here. Do you think that benefits teams like Rochester?
I think definitely, yeah. In the past, I think we had 1 year we went to California to start the season, and we played the LA Blues, who are now the Orange County Blues, and then stayed in LA for a week and then played them the following weekend, which was a huge waste of money. But everybody in the Rhinos seemed pretty excited about less travel, and especially how that impacts the schedule. The Rhinos kind of lucked out. We don't have any back-to-backs, and I think there's only one or two times that they play twice in one weekend. So that was a big big improvement, and everybody in the Rhinos is excited about it. Everybody that I've talked to, fans, are pretty excited about it. Even Nicholas Murray in the league office, he was beaming about it. He couldn't stop tweeting about how the schedule is an improvement this year over the previous seasons. I think important for the Rhinos is playing Toronto four times and playing Montreal four times. It wasn't that long ago that there's a huge rivalry in the A-League between the Rhinos and the Montreal Impact. A rivalry that included player brawls and fans getting arrested for brawling outside of stadiums. So there are stories of Rhinos fans being barred from going to Canada because of the rivalry between Montreal and Rochester. So I don't know if it's probably not going to be as intense as it was back in the day, but there'll still be elements of that. So that'll be really important. In Rochester, we're kind of bummed that we won't get to play the Rail Monarchs, the Rail Salt Lake team. There's a Rochester native, Jordan Allen, who grew up in Rochester, then went to the U17 residency in Bradenton, and then somehow got signed by RSL as an academy player. So he still comes back to Rochester. People in Rochester know who he is. So it's a little sad that we won't get to play him, but it'll just be a low-cost alternative as opposed to previous seasons.
I'm assuming everyone also likes hockey in this group because we all know the movie Slapshot, old-time hockey. This is not old-time hockey, folks. This is, we'll call it old-time soccer between Rochester and Montreal. I don't know if FC Montreal will have the same stigma or the same hype as Impact Rhinos was back in the day, but if that's the case and old-time soccer comes back, Brendan, it's your fault. No, I'm just joking. But,
Well, you'll have to come bail me out then.
I'll try to find the Hanson brothers to find a way to bail your butt out. That's for sure. But but talking about with of course these MLS affiliations, we all know about Harrisburg City Islanders affiliate with the Philadelphia Union. You know that whole thing got started with those two teams there, Brian. And as we've seen already, this partnership between MLS and some of these teams in the USL. Working well. Once again, Louisville City is with Orlando. Pittsburgh, I think, is with Columbus now. We got St. Louis with Chicago. Charlotte, I think, is with Colorado and vice versa, whatever it is. But, you know, if you want, you know, Harrisburg is really the pioneers of this whole MLS USL affiliation department.
Yeah, and I mean, we're really proud of the fact that we brought the model that the league is pretty much using at this point into the league. Our club owner, Eric Pettis, and talked with the brass down in Philadelphia. They got a working relationship together, and things just really went from there. And just to see where that idea has really caught on, and now if you're a team that doesn't have an affiliation at some point, you better find one quick. And even last year, there were a few teams that didn't have an official affiliation, and they quickly called up a couple teams and made sure that they were able to get some players in on loan and do things like that. I think that's really what the league has done now. maybe the biggest story of the season, and that is you have all of these MLS squads who are now more or less running their own USL side as well, and how are they going to support them? And it's really difficult right now trying to, like, gain some information on some of these teams early on. For example, maybe, Daniel, you know better than any of us right now what New York Red Bulls 2 is going to put together. Because as far as I know, they have a coach, and that's about it. Because that's all the information that I've seen about them. And there's other organizations. For example, Real Monarchs is a perfect example of an organization that they went right out and said, this is our team, this is what we're going to do, we're going to support this team, and they really have gone gung-ho about really supporting them. I'm really interested to see how some of these teams go this year in terms of what they are going to do to support these teams, how well they're going to run them. And I think a lot of the teams, you look on the West Coast especially, teams that built from the ground up, like the Sounders, the Timbers, the Whitecaps, who are all in the old A-League, and then they ended up working their way all the way into MLS at that point. And those are teams that know and understand exactly how to grassroots the thing and be able to really support a team like that and what it takes. Are some of these other teams who didn't go that direction, are they going to be able to do the same, or are they going to struggle mightily because of it?
Absolutely. And I can definitely tell you guys right now, at the moment, you are correct, Brian. John Wolanich, another club legend, will be managing the Red Bulls. Please don't fire him after 2 years. Is basically
he's
got to
have somebody to coach,
players.
Doesn't he?
Yeah. He's got a couple of people.
I mean, he was a heck of a player. I love John. He was a great player. But if you don't have anybody on your roster to coach, it's kind of hard to really get them together.
Absolutely. I know they're trying out some people. I'm also understanding some of these, maybe the academy players in the Red Bulls organization are probably going to get USL contracts. I'm assuming at the moment maybe Manolo Sanchez will be transferring down there. So that's the current draft pick, one of the two draft picks from this year's Super Draft in MLS. So I'll have to wait and see. I know that he's going to have Ibrahim Sagaya as a member of his coaching staff with him. So right now, mostly we know who the coaching staff is. We'll find out when we get closer to the start of the USL season and when the Red Bulls begin. So obviously it's going to be one of those interesting things. Here's another interesting thing, though, and I'll go back to Sacramento since now the Republic, Josh, has the target on their back, on their backs as the defending champions. And at the same time, what is Preki going to do for an encore?
Well, I was going to say you know Preki, but you don't really, I suppose. But I asked Preki kind of the same question at training a few weeks ago. You know, what can fans expect? What are you planning to do? He just did, you know, the stereotypical Preki answer. He's like, all I know is that we're going to be competitive. I have nothing else for you. Sorry. It's just all he can say is that they're going to try their best to be competitive, things like that. But I think generally if they don't make the playoffs, it's an absolute failure of a season, but that's kind of a given after winning a championship. I think what's going to happen is they'll probably finish in the top three of the conference and then make a deep run in the playoffs. But that's all I can say, because I know that there's going to be an interesting fight out west between Sacramento, LA 2, Arizona, and probably the Aztecs as well.
Absolutely. That should be a very interesting battle. Again, ladies and gentlemen, once again, this is the Four Scenes Fire American Soccer Show here on blogtalkradio.com. Episode number 231. This is the 2015 USL Soccer Season Preview Show. Once again, Dalton Main in Louisville City. Brian Kaiser in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. We have Brendan Doherty in Rochester, New York. Matthew Gray in Austin, Texas. And Josh Beeman over in Sacramento, California. And as we continue on here, of course, once again, there's always a lot of questions about this upcoming season. Isn't it interesting, gentlemen, as we go once again to the East, we're going to have a Pennsylvania rivalry between Pittsburgh and Harrisburg. We got Rochester in the thick of things in the Western New York and near the central part of the country. And let's also not forget with Charleston and Rochester. And I guess, Brian, I could go to you on this one about Charlotte Independence. It was really interesting to see the Eagles putting themselves in a relegation back down to PDL. Never thought I'd see that happen. I thought Charlotte was going to lose their team. But it looks like this new group coming in that took over for the Eagles, now called Charlotte Independence, obviously. What do you think is going to happen there? Do you think it's still going to be the same type of players from the past, or do you think this is a completely different team?
I think it's going to be a different team. And the reason I say that, I don't think it'll be completely different. I just mean that the Charlotte Eagles in the past were a very faith-driven organization. They were one where it was a soccer mission, not just to play soccer, but also to spread faith. And it was a very active organization that way. And I think that's part of the reason they dropped down to PDL, was because they still wanted to carry that mission on, but they just couldn't do it at the level that they needed to keep up with where USL is going. So now you have this new organization coming in, and where they may pick up a few carryover players from that team, and they do have Jorge Herrera, who has come into that group, and they also have scored up, I believe, Enzo Martinez is another guy. So, I mean, immediately, you're going to have immediate respect for what they can do offensively. They're very, very young, though, in the back. And their relationship with Colorado Rapids is going to be important for them to see who they get, what kind of players are able to come into that side and help them out. And they could really use some help in the back to try to gel. I think that may be one of the themes this year for a lot of teams. There's a lot of teams that seem like they have some scoring punch, how quickly young defenders figure things out in the back and who can really solidify, maybe end up telling a real tale. But I think I'm kind of excited about what Charlotte and the Independents can do down there. It's been an area that has at least supported the team. It may not have that overwhelming stadium overflow crowd that some areas do, but with a new organization, with maybe a little bit different focus on what they're trying to do soccer-wise, I'm interested to see what they're capable of doing. But I think it really is a positive look for them, where you have the one group who wasn't able to do what they needed to anymore at that level and recognized it, stepped aside, and somebody else comes in to try to fill the void.
And as we talk about filling some voids here, obviously Matthew, Austin are taking road trips back over to Oklahoma City, as well as the state of Oklahoma. You're going to have yourself a big, big Oklahoma State rivalry with the Energy, as well as the Tulsa Roughnecks, not far away from each other, as well as not far away from Austin. You can just take an Amtrak train going up to Oklahoma City and just go play against the Energy and then take a bus to go to Tulsa.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things, being new into the league and not having any, you know, really in-state rivalry, so to speak. That's one of the big questions, is who will be the Aztecs' rivals? We've had them in the past. You know, you look at, you know, back in the PDL days, we had a great rivalry with the Laredo Heat, who also won national championships. As we look at this coming season, it is a bit difficult for us to say, will it be, you know, either OKC or Tulsa? Could it be RSL, because Paul DeGlisch, in the year that he was away from the Aztecs, was an assistant in RSL? Could it be, you know, Portland Timbers 2, where we've got a historical relationship with, having sold them their first player for MLS in Eddie Johnson? We don't know at this point. I think at this point for us, it is a moot question. For us in Austin, the real big thing that we're focused on is, yeah, we know this is our first year back in USL. We know that we have the quality to make the playoffs. We just have to have the endurance, because we've got a lot of professionals on this team. We also got a lot of guys who've been playing PDL for the last couple of years.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's going to be a big challenge and a big change. And, of course, automatic qualification to the U.S. Open Cup is always a plus in my book. Josh, as we talk about that, I think it's going to be interesting between Sacramento and Colorado Springs Switchbacks. Now, obviously, the Switchbacks are an expansion side, but as you have a legendary player and coach like Preki, Colorado Springs also has a legendary player from the U.S. national team who was part of that 1990 team that qualified and playing in that big game down in the Port of Spain in Trinidad and Tobago with the Paul Galagiri shot heard around the world, Steve Trichu. the former U.S. national team defender, will be managing the Colorado Springs Switchbacks. That should be an interesting matchup with two former legends of the game pitting one another as wits.
Yeah, it should be really interesting with those two really important coaches in professional and U.S. national team history. The only thing is, though, I'm not really sure. I have been trying to find out information, well, as much as I can while still covering Sacramento, about Colorado Springs. I don't really know all that much about their roster. All I know is their coach. And like you guys said with the New York Red Bulls too, you kind of need a roster for a coach to coach. He can't, you know, go out there, be a player manager, 1 versus 11.
Well,
so
let me step in for a second.
Personalities, though, I think that should be interesting, but I'm not really sure about their roster and how it's going to play out with the team myself.
But let me step in for a second with Colorado Springs, because I know a couple of the guys that they signed on that team. Luke Vercolone, who's with Richmond for many, many years and has been great with them, and Shintaro Harada, who seems to just migrate to whatever team is needing somebody to add that veteran presence. So you put two guys like that in there right away, and it tells me that they are probably going to try to be very staunch defensively. And that seems like it's going to be a very hard-nosed group when they put people there, because those are two guys that if I was building a franchise and trying to put young players and have them understand the game, those are two guys I'd want in place to help them.
Yeah,
so there you go.
That.
There we go. So now you have some information. Don't worry, Josh. I will hook you up with Mr. Trichu when the show is over. I promise you that. But don't worry, you'll probably get
all
more
right.
information.
I didn't want to lie and say that I had information when I didn't.
Oh, okay, that's fine. Don't worry about it. But you can lie to me. I don't care. I'm not gonna hold you to it. Don't worry about that. But anyway, as we keep on going here, once again, it's going to be very interesting to see how everything plays out this season with the affiliations, the call-ups, and while. And we'll start off going Rochester, Harrisburg, Louisville, Austin, and Sacramento. Do you guys feel right now, with the way certain things are going on, with now that every team has an affiliation with an MLS team, does it hurt the rosters that you're going to have, or does it help with the player? I mean, we know if they're going to get called up to the MLS team, it's not going to be a big deal, obviously, but still, will it bother you guys because you got an important match coming up? It could be against a rival. It could be you're in the middle of your respective conferences and you need the 3 points at home or on the road. Will this help, or do you think this will hurt? And we'll go from Brendan, Brian, Dalton, Matthew, and then Josh.
Yeah, there was only one player that was ever called back to New England in the middle of the season who was, you know, supposed to be there the whole time. That was in 2013. Right back, Bilal Duckett had to go to fly from Rochester to Portland for an MLS game because New England was down 3.5 defenders or something absurd that would never actually happen again. It was a little different in 2013 because there was a coaching shakeup in Rochester. But last year, Bob Lilly always said he had a really strong relationship with Jay Heaps. And the guys that I write with from the Bent Musket, they said the same thing from the Foxborough side of things. So there's always lots of conversations going on. They have a weekly call every Monday or Tuesday, depending on when their last game was, where they just go over how the players from New England are doing in Rhinos training, you know, if they're getting enough touches, if they're getting the reps they need to get. That said, the players haven't always been the most impactful players that the Revolution have sent down. Over the 2 years so far, only one player was really like an automatic starter. I think that was Alex Sunley in central midfield last year. He started out as an option in defensive midfield and then grew into a two-way midfield player who got a lot more starts through the second half of the season. Other than that, a lot of the guys haven't exactly been week in, week out players for the Rhinos. And that might get better now that I think MLS rosters might be going down to 28, which means that instead of getting, you know, the last four guys, 27 through 30, now you're going to get 25 through 28, might be marginally better players sent down to Rochester. But it really shouldn't be that big of a deal, and there shouldn't really be any surprises given the constant communication between the two coaching staffs.
Yeah, I agree with Brendan on that. That as long as you have a great relationship with the parent club, that's the key. It's all about communication. It's all about what each team understands the relationship to be, and it's all about what the parent club really wants out of this situation. If they want to just have some of their younger players get some playing time, then they can throw them down, and, you know, they may not be the greatest players. Maybe they're trying to find out if they can be professional players, and this is where they get that training for being professional players. I know with Harrisburg's relationship, we had some very good individuals come in who were very impactful. Pedro Ribeiro for us last year, Richie Marquez, Jimmy McLaughlin. You look at those three guys specifically who were on loan from the Union, and those are guys that essentially helped carry this team into the championship game a year ago when we got on a roll. And they were there the entire season. It also can be a disadvantage in certain other places. I know last year, U.S. Open Cup, and they at one point tried to keep you away from this, but the City Islanders played against the Union in the Open Cup. And the head coach for the Union at that point, Coach Hackett, decided, none of the guys for Harrisburg who had already played in the Open Cup, who are on loan from the Union, none of them are allowed to play against us. So don't play any of those guys. And that definitely impacted that game. Harrisburg still went down to Philadelphia and were in the lead in that game until the 90th minute of that contest in Philadelphia. The Union win that game and end up making a run all the way to the championship game. So it all depends, I think, many times what both teams are understanding the relationship to be. But as far as, you know, if it's an advantage or disadvantage, it's how the league is right now. And it's how every team is going to have to adjust to it. Each situation may be slightly different, but for the most part, it's a situation where you may have a team change greatly because of a specific player. Look at Dom Dwyer for Orlando City a couple years ago. You know, it may change the landscape of the league just by having a couple impactful players come in. But for the most part, you still have to develop your own players in order to be competitive year in and year out.
I think that's exactly right. With this being Louisville City's first season, you know, there's not a lot I can speak to in terms of what they've done in the past because they haven't done anything in the past. But what I think is most interesting about these agreements is that there's nothing written about them. There's no set agreement for all of these groups of teams. And the agreements are going to be very free-form. But what I think James O'Connor has done at Louisville is he's built a team that can sustain itself without the people that Orlando is going to send down. Obviously, that, you know, they're going to hopefully get some people that will be impact players, but I think the coach, and I don't think James O'Connor is alone in doing this. I think he's built a team that can stand alone. There is definitely a backbone to the team that he's built, even with only three preseason games. You know, there are clear team leaders. There are people who are going to be impact players, and that is all without anybody from Orlando City yet. There are rumors about people that might be coming, but at this point, you're looking at a team that hopefully, in James O'Connor's perspective, is starting to look complete and starting to be a team that he can rely on. Now, if that were to break up, you know, it could be detrimental to the team and to the organization. But I think you've got to imagine that with this agreement, that they want it to work for both parties. And so the agreement is probably going to be something that they will discuss and say, okay, you know, Orlando wants these things, Louisville wants these things, and they're going to work together to make sure they do what's best for both clubs. As Brenda was saying about the club relationship, it's all about them keeping each other, you know, going in the same direction, keeping them moving up. And so, as I said, you know, Louisville has no history yet, but in the few preseason games we've seen, they definitely have a backbone to their team, and they've definitely tried, I think James O'Connor's tried to build a team that can survive without those players and that can thrive without those players. So we'll see what the season brings, but I think Orlando, even without the player sharing agreement is going to offer a lot of good guidance for James O'Connor, and especially with his players brought in Brian Burke, who came from Orlando. They know what it's like to be in Orlando's shoes as a new team. They know what they want to do, and they're going to play a lot like that. So I think it'll be interesting to see what happens this season.
Yeah, and I think from an Aztecs perspective, our view on it is, you know, we've lost a lot of players over the years as they've moved on to MLS, you know, Kakuta Mane, who's at Vancouver, Kyrie Shelton, who's doing very well at New York City FC, Dylan Powers. We've lost those players to MLS. And so in Austin, you know, it's kind of hard because as a supporter, you're excited to see these players move up. But on the other hand, you hate to miss them. And so we're already kind of, I guess, acclimated, if you will, to the possibility of having Columbus Crew, who's our affiliate, you know, call up a player like Boubacar Jobe or Chris Turpak and you know, leverage them in several MLS games. So we're already kind of, you know, getting used to that. We would, you know, be missing them, of course, especially if we got down into crunch time where, you know, whether it's a U.S. Open Cup match, whether it's getting points for its playoff positioning, losing one of our better players would be a real challenge. And I think Paul Dalglish is, you know, not only an experienced manager, but playing with Scott, but is probably not going to hesitate in telling Berhalter if he's trying to take a player that, frankly, we can't lose at this point. But where we've had more of our conversations is who from Columbus do we want to see in Austin? And, you know, we've already seen a number of recruits that they've picked up in the draft that we're pretty much expecting to see come down. The Crew actually drafted a former Aztecs defender in the name of Caleb Bryden, who selfishly we'd like to see back simply because he was a not only a fan favorite, he was an absolute stone wall in central defense. So, you know, for us, the focus is instead of worrying about, you know, who we can lose, who we will lose, where will we lose them, you know, Dalglish is really focused on everybody has to be able to step in at any minute because it may not just be, you know, Columbus calling up players. It could be like we had a couple of seasons ago, come July, just a slew of injuries. You've got to be able to step up into that starting 11 position and pick it up from day one.
And as far as Sacramento goes, it's really kind of it's a little bit different from last season and this season because last season Sacramento was a bit unique in that it had two MLS affiliates, Portland Timbers and San Jose Earthquakes. Obviously, with Timbers 2 coming in, the Timbers are no longer an affiliate, but the Quakes still are. And it was a bit of a – both of those teams had a different had a different agenda in sending players down to the Republic. The Timbers, they sent players down for the long term. Jake Gleason was with Sacramento for just about every single game. Well, obviously, except for when he was injured. I think he only played one or two games in the CONCACAF Champions League with the Timbers, but otherwise, he was in Sacramento the whole time. They had players like George Pachive and Steven Evans who were down for an extended period of time but didn't really last the whole season. And you compare that to San Jose, who the only real long-term player that the Earthquakes sent down was Adam John, and he wasn't even here for a particularly long time. The Quakes didn't send down any lone players until like maybe the third or fourth game of the season, and they recalled all their lone players for a span of about maybe a few weeks, three games maybe. So it really. The Earthquakes really seem to have more of a short-term mindset as far as sending players down to the Republic. So that's something that Preki and the coaching staff are going to have to deal with, maybe players coming down for one or two games to get some game fitness, or if they're not, or if they're, you know, only riding the bench or not even making the 18, and then, you know, going back to San Jose when the need arises. So I think, like some of the other guys have said, Preki's really tried to build a team that can withstand those player movements, those fluid player movements. He's built a team. Well, he's kept the majority of the USL Pro, or USL, my bad, winning championship team.
That's $10, by the way.
Yeah. He kept just about every single player that started that match, except for Jake Gleason and Adam John, who were lone players. And he added, Sacramento's added quite a lot of depth players already. They have considerable depth at just about everywhere on the field. The only really thin part of the Republic's roster was forward, because up until last week, they had only had two forwards on the roster, but they recently signed two more that, even though the Republic haven't been doing particularly great in their preseason friendlies, the two forwards that they signed, they've showed fairly well, even though they haven't been scoring a whole ton of goals, they showed fairly well in preseason. So it really depends on what the Earthquakes are going to do. I still think it's probably going to be more of a short-term loan kind of thing, but with a new coach, you don't really know how things are going to be. I know that I haven't talked to Preki all that much about his relationship with Dom Kinnear, but it seems like the two of them have a fairly good relationship. They've talked about the players that we're going to see on loan, but like I said, who really knows with the Earthquake?
Well, it should be interesting to see what's going to happen, everyone, obviously, with what's transpired so far. This brand new image of the USL going forward, obviously, it's going to be an interesting season once again. It's great to have some old teams coming back, obviously, into the fold. It's great seeing these new teams coming into the fold, whether it's standalone clubs with an affiliation agreement or these MLS teams bringing in their USL 2 sides. Or there are two teams coming into the USL, I should say. But it should be a great, interesting. Okay, we are going to go down the line once again because I want to get your opinions. Who will make the playoffs in both East and West? And I'm not asking for your USL champions. We're not going to get there until we get to the end of the regular season. So we're going to start off once again. We're going to go to Rochester. Then we're going to go to Harrisburg. Then we go to Louisville City. Then we'll go to Austin, and then we'll go to Sacramento. Gentlemen, go ahead.
All right. Half the teams make the playoffs, right?
Yep.
6 and 8.
Yeah. The first place I'll go is Harrisburg. Every time I said something bad about Harrisburg last year, they ended up winning that week. I said there was no way that they would ever win a playoff game. And then they came back and made it all the way to the championship. So I'm going to say that they make the playoffs. Red Bulls, I just don't see it. There's too many pieces still moving around. Montreal and Toronto have really good academy systems, and they've already announced some of the players that are going to be on their team. And then Charleston and Richmond, you can never bet against them. And my sixth team making the playoffs in the East has got to be Rochester. There's only been one season. It's kind of fresh in everybody's memory, but the 2013 season was the only season in Rhino's history that the team didn't make the postseason. So that's bare minimum for Rochester.
Okay, Brian.
Let's start in the East. I like what Wilmington did to end the season last year. I think they have good direction going right now. I've got the Hammerheads winning the East. I'm putting the pressure right on the new franchise, Louisville City. I've got them coming in second place. I love what's in place, and I know Orlando City is going to help them immensely through the entire season. Love some of the people that they've brought in, Matt Fondi, Juan Guzman, Brian Burke, Connor Shinofsky. I mean, that team already looks like a team that should be among the best from a talent standpoint. It's just a matter of getting things in place. Richmond's always there. I'll put them in again, because even if I would say something about Richmond not making it, they're going to make it anyways. Charleston, they always make it, and they always seem to be right around the place where Richmond is, maybe just a step below. Rochester, I'm putting it at number 5. And at number six, I'm basically saying just flip a coin because as far as the teams that are left at that point, I know I technically should put Harrisburg in, but I didn't put them in the playoffs last year. So, and they made the playoffs. And at the, in the playoffs, I didn't say anything nice about them then either. I said they're going to get annihilated by Orlando City. They're going to get beat by Richmond. And they won both of those games. So I'm once again going to diss my own team and lay the gauntlet down for them. If I'm going to throw a sixth team in there, it's not going to be the Riverhounds because I just pride will never allow me to do that. So let's throw in Charlotte just because I know they have some decent players up front, and we'll see what happens with the other franchises there. In the West, got to go Sacramento, as deep as they are, defending champs, Preki. I mean, they've got everything right now. LA Galaxy, too. I think Arizona is going to be my third team out there, and I think that that's a team that's really going to be on the rise. Watch out for Arizona United. Austin, I love what the preseason looks like for them so far. And the other teams I'm going to throw in there are going to be Vancouver and Real Monarchs, because I think both of those systems will support their teams in a way that will allow them to be successful. But, I mean, a lot of the expansion teams out in the West Side, who knows?
Well, as a new reporter to the league, I don't want to get in over my head and diss anybody's teams here. So I'm just going to say I think Louisville City will make the playoffs. I've seen good things from the organization. I think the organization is very driven. They're very intense about things. They know what they want, and they're going to go after it hard. They've got a great relationship with Orlando, who I think is going to guide them well. And what I've seen so far out of the team, they've got good leadership players in each of the roles, you know, defense, midfield, forward. And I think, you know, they've got strong people like Connor Shinofsky, who's got good length and a good solid experience set. You've got midfielders that are going to contribute well. And then you've especially got this guy named Matt Fondi that everybody talks so much about. And I want to talk to you a little bit of how popular he is in town and how he gives me confidence with this team. During their friendly at UK, University of Kentucky, the other day, I was told that after the game, somebody said, you went bravely in for a couple of headers, and there was one that you really threw your body into. And then they said, tell me about it. And he said, you know, I just wanted to make sure my hair was okay. And that gives me confidence in that guy and the team. I mean, you can't fault that attitude. You know, somebody who's looking out for their hair is looking out for their best interest. I think he's got a proven goal-scoring ability, and I think they're going to be a dangerous team. So that's what I got. I think Louisville City is going to make the playoffs. Other than that, I'm excited to see more of the USL this year.
Yeah, I mean, this is such a difficult task because you look at so many of the teams in the West and even in the East, you know, across the league, there's so many new teams that even if they've got great preseasons, you know, we all know that it starts, you know, afresh when you play that first regular season game. You know, from the Aztecs, we're sort of in the same spot as Dalton up in Louisville. We've been so focused on our own stuff. We do have a goal of making the postseason. So I do think in the West, the Aztecs will be there. I have to admit, and I'm not, you know, I'm not trying to blow smoke up Josh's skirt. If anybody does not have Sacramento going into the postseason, then you need to put the bottle down. You then look at the rest of them, and frankly, I look at it more from the background of the entire franchise. So for me, Seattle and Portland have to be in there. I'll be honest with you, Portland is less logical and more the fact that from an MLS perspective, I'm a big Timbers fan, so I'm being a homer there. LA Galaxy, too, only because of what they did last year. I think they're going to be in there. And then finally, Arizona United. As I looked at the tables, really it was less of what are some of the teams in the West doing to actually make it to the postseason, what are some that just have too many things to deal with. You know, and there's some stories with some of the teams that I don't have going into the postseason. But for right now, those would be my six. If you force me to put money on them, I got a club nickel I'd do that with.
All right, so I'll probably start out in the East first. It's not necessarily my point of specialty, but I'll give it a shot. I go ahead and say I'm not entirely sure who's going to be on top. I agree that that Richmond and Charleston are definitely going to be in there. Maybe Richmond about 3, Charleston maybe 4 or 5. I'll probably say that Louisville is probably going to be up there closer to the top because of Matt Fondi. I really, I honestly hadn't been around USL or USL Pro as long as some others have, like King of USL, Chad Hollingsworth. He was really high on Matt Fondi, so I guess I didn't really believe the hype until in, like, the first Louisville preseason game that I checked out. He scored, like, 2, almost 3 goals, so I'm a firm believer in the Matt Fondi hype now. So I'd say Louisville, Richmond, Charleston, and I don't really want to say Charlotte Independence, although I do kind of like what's going on over there. I think they would have been a lot stronger if they had signed a certain Sacramento State alumni that was on trial with them, but that's me just being a homer. And then, who else? I'm going to go ahead and say Wilmington as well. And then for 6th place, I can't really call a 6th place team. I think I know I'm probably snubbing somebody with that, but I can't really call a 6th place.
They're not, so don't worry about it.
All right, cool.
All right.
So in the West Coast, I'm going to go ahead and say definitely Sacramento, top of the West. They're going to have some stiff competition from Los Dos and Arizona. I think that with how well some of the Los Dos players did last year, they might be seeing more first-team action, so they might actually be a little bit weaker. So I'd say probably Arizona is going to take the number 2 spot, then Los Dos in the 3rd spot. And then I like what the Aztecs are doing, so I'd get them in there. And then probably, I don't really think, I'm not entirely sure about how well Portland's academy system and their draft picks are going to feed into their 2 teams. So I don't really think they're going to make the playoffs this year. So I think it'd probably be Seattle and Real Monarchs with the final 2 playoff spots out in the West.
All right. Everyone, thank you so much for the time. I really appreciate everyone. Hope to talk to everyone during the season. Brendan, are you coming down to Red Bull Arena on March 28th?
I'm still trying to figure that one out.
All right.
I'll be sure to let you know if I do, though.
Please do. I've already got my credential accepted for USL Red Bull games, so I hope to see you at Red Bull Arena.
All right.
All right, everyone. Thank you so much. And good luck during the season. Talk to you next time.
Thanks, Dan.
Bye.
All right, good night. And this has been the USL Season Preview Show 2015 on the For Your Scenes Fire American Soccer Show. The league gets underway this weekend, Saturday, March 21st. Charleston Battery hosting Toronto FC 2 at Black Blood Stadium. Seattle Sounders 2 hosting Sacramento Republic at Starfire Sports Complex, and the LA Galaxy 2 against Real Monarchs of Salt Lake City at the StubHub Center, and that'll be on Sunday, March 22nd. Enjoy your football. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye. Talk to you next time. Take care. Good night.